Before he would only take on projects that would encompass multiple presidential administrations, Richard Linklater decided to take an easy paycheck and let Jack Black be his pure self. School of Rock was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm here with District 13's finest tributes, Camila Adams. And there was a point. That's not just her mood today.
Right.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Name two great chick drummers.
I mean... On the one hand, that felt a little dated. On the other hand, I was like, I can't come up with another one, though.
Mo from the Velvet Underground, whose last name I can't remember.
Oh, I didn't know they had a female. I mean, there's plenty of like punk bands with a lady drummer that I like, but you know, these kids wouldn't. And Jack Black's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tastes are certainly not aware of anything deeper than that. Anyway, Dewey Finn, I mean, we're going to get into it.
Yeah.
Is he classic rock radio. By the way, we're here at the iHeartRadio podcast studio. Thanks, as always, to iHeartRadio for letting us record. But anyway, Robin, I have not introduced everyone at this table yet, have I?
No, you haven't. We have a very special guest.
Yay.
Go ahead. First ever guest.
So Arcade Comedy Theater, where I work and Sean produces shows, and Camila occasionally goes to shows, I assume.
Yeah.
We had a silent auction to support our nonprofit mission to bring arts to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And one of the items was a guest appearance on this show. And our guest, Dan Hadfield, made a very generous donation and won the item. And so he is here, and we also let him pick this episode's film.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, Camila's right. Camila was singling to me to...
Let's use some of those sound effects.
Hit the "we drew a good movie" button. But it applies even better here. Dan, tell us your relationship with Arcade and what made you want to, A, support the theater, but B, support it by bidding on this particular experience.
So I take classes there, and I've really enjoyed my time there. And Robin was my teacher for the first two classes there, and I really enjoyed having her. And she said she was on this podcast, so I started listening. And then I was listening along, and then I really liked it, so I went back, watched all the movies, and listened to all the episodes.
Oh, wow.
Watches along.
We've barely done that.
and so when I saw it as an auction item, I thought that'd be a fun way to support the theater and have some fun. So.
Cool. We really appreciate it. And tell us why School of Rock, of the 1,200-plus movies on our list, why was School of Rock your choice?
I guess it has to be my favorite movie.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why I like it so much, but I'm a big Jack Black fan, and I really like this movie. And then I'm obsessed with it. I've seen I went to see the musical when it was here. I've also seen the TV show, which is...
There's a TV show?
There's a TV show on Nickelodeon.
Oh, yeah. Three seasons. I watched every episode.
It was a pretty direct, the main character's name was Dewey Finn, and, you know.
Wow.
And they do a Halloween episode in the movie, or in the TV show, and he dresses up as Jack Black.
Uh-huh. Aha.
Oh, I love
cute.
That kind of stuff.
This is going to make me feel bad about my mixed feelings on the film.
Just to be clear, I also love this movie. I think I mentioned that when we said that it was Dan's pick.
Yeah, but clearly I don't feel bad about offending you.
Offending a guest.
No.
This is a guest at the table here.
You're wearing your School of Rock the Musical gear. I haven't seen the musical. Is it, you know, pretty much... I did just see Mean Girls, and that was like, yes, it's the same experience in a slightly different way. Tell us about the School of Rock musical.
It's pretty similar to the movie, except for they add this storyline. Oh, not really storyline, but a
plot point
of, like, the kids are like, Dewey Finn really taught us how to break out of our shells and not be shy, and our parents wouldn't listen to us, and he would. And then they also kind of made him fall in love with the principal, which is kind of not what I was expecting at the end of that, but I was like, okay.
Yeah, they kind of stayed away from that in the movie. Like, deliberately, it felt like. Like, let's not go there.
Yeah. I disagree.
Okay.
She pretty much asks him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, and I remember being like, this is not very professional.
Right, no.
Amanda is in your employ.
Does she ask him out?
No, she says, let's go to teacher-parent night together. Pick me up around 6.
But she, but she says it's not a date,
She says
though.
It's not a date or anything.
She says that. But
that, yeah, but that's what you say when you're asking someone out and you're not 100% sure that they're
going
to say
how they feel
yes.
about it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, otherwise, I mean...
I got stuck at that phase on a lot, on many occasions. The musical was in my facts. Let's get it out of the way. Now, School of Rock was adapted into a musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber, but I don't think he wrote all the songs.
I think he did. All right.
Okay.
Partnered with somebody.
Yeah.
What?
It's a good soundtrack. It's on Spotify. You should listen.
My niece Gia loves it.
It's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Premiered on Broadway in January 2015. Ran for 4 years, over 1,300 performances. It's still running in London today on the West End. And Shahadi Wright Joseph, who you know as Zora in Jordan Peele's Us, was in the original Broadway cast.
Aww. Cool.
It was nominated for 4 Tonys. But it's not time for facts yet. That's just something we were talking about. First, we have a 60-second recap of the film.
It's me this week, and I did not prepare.
Oh, snap.
Making it more of a challenge than ever before. So, completely unprepared, here's Robin Hitchcock with a perfect 60-second-long summation of the plot of School of Rock.
Jack Black plays Dewey Finn, and he's a loser, and he gets kicked out of his band, No Vacancy, and then his roommate, Mike White, is that his name?
Yes.
Who wrote the movie, mm-hmm. and Mike White's girlfriend, Sarah Silverman, who's a total harpy, which mm-hmm. it always is bad when I start editorializing. He steals a job from Mike White, who's a substitute teacher. He shows up at this fancy prep school and wants to like sleep through the day, but then he finds out the kids are good at music, and mm-hmm. so he creates a band of students, and they have a great time, and they play at the Battle of the Bands, and they come in second place because that's what happens in these movies, which is nonsense. They're so much better than No Vacancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he and Mike White start a school of their own.
Yeah, I think that did
that's
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly succeeded. It was 44 seconds long.
Woo!
Nice. Well done.
And other than getting into the Dewey Finn was kicked out of No Vacancy, and initially the whole thing was a scheme, and he was just using the talented children, but then he developed affection for them. You could have got to that.
I also didn't talk about how he is a straight up criminal.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Colin and I were going through, like, how many different things could he be charged with?
Oh, my God.
There's a lot of kidnapping and endangerment of minors.
The counts of kidnapping are maybe 100 or more.
Well, he was saying he's not sure it's kidnapping, but it's definitely
kidnapping.
It's child endangerment and it's fraud to the school.
Nobody knew where those kids were except him. No one gave him permission. Their parent knew what was going on. Yeah. He was kidnapping those kids. In a van. Like, how much more cliche can you get?
It might be kidnapping just at the school, but once he puts them in the van, it's definitely kidnapping.
Briefly, before I forget, can we talk about the several years of Mike White's career? Mike White, a legitimate director, writer, a successful Hollywood person, the several years of his career where instead he was a normal guy on reality shows? Competition shows?
Oh, he was on The Amazing Race.
Yes, he was, with his dad. Yeah.
He was on The Amazing Race with his dad twice and then was on Survivor and came in second. Like, he nearly won $1 million on Survivor.
Shut the front door.
Because he's a Survivor superfan and was friends with Jeff Probst. And just started sending in tapes of himself, famous director Mike White.
Wow.
And apparently, this is our second consecutive episode mentioning how my mom watches Survivor. She told me that, like, early on, a couple of people went, "Aren't you Ned Schneebly?" Like, in the tribe.
Yes. That's amazing.
Anyway.
Yeah, he's got an interesting filmography here as a writer, anyway. I didn't look at everything else, but... Yeah, I had no idea the depths of Mike's life.
So one question I had, is this Richard Linklater's first mainstream movie?
How do you count it?
Interesting list.
It's so, like, incidental that this is by him. Like, it's not flat. There's almost no direction happening. It's pretty much, you know...
Let him go.
Yeah, it's pretty much a let Jack Black go kind of thing. And so, like, every 20 minutes, I'd remember, this is a Richard Linklater movie. But that doesn't, like, achieve anything.
Right. I think Bernie was mainstream.
But that's after this.
Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused.
Is that mainstream?
Boyhood.
In
we
stereo.
Very in unison there. That was right? Great. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Why would you say, okay, the Newton Boys was definitely mainstream.
Oh, he made the Newton Boys?
Yes.
He's a weird guy.
Yeah.
And then, to, like, 2 years after this, he did Bad News Bears because he was like, it's nice to get money.
And also, he likes working with children,
mm-hmm.
Part of why he made Boyhood.
Right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, Boyhood, I was like, okay, I'm on board. But when he announced this
Merrily We Roll Along.
I'm going to film Merrily We Roll Along over 20 years. At the same time that everyone else in the world is like, hey, we can make old people's faces young now. You do doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doo, and an old person's young again.
And I got more to say about that when we get to You Can't Handle the Truth.
Okay. I want to go to our guest first. You said it's your favorite movie, and we've talked before, we talked a lot about on the You Can't Handle the Truth iteration of this podcast, that favorite is a different thing than best. But still, you know, give us your history with this movie, why it kind of connected with you.
I don't really know. I remember going to the movies and seeing it, and I think this is one of the first movies I got to see without my parents. Woo.
That makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. That probably is why it is one of my favorite movies. But then I just, after watching Jack Black, I'm just like, this guy is awesome. And then I also then remembered he's part of Tenacious D, which I was already a fan of. So this is just for me.
I was just commenting on that. When I was watching, I was like, I always forget that he's part of Tenacious D. Like, whenever I think about Jack Black, I always forget about Tenacious D.
And then I noticed that, like, in the credits, it says Jack Black appears courtesy of whatever records.
Because he's singing and he has a record deal.
Oh, yeah.
Do you play an instrument?
I play the drums.
Okay. One question I had for you, I know you're significantly younger than me. Were you the age of these children when you saw this movie?
Shush, but yes.
Shush.
I was like,
well, they're not that much younger. I mean,
I was like, what, fourth grade?
I was like 2 years older than them.
I think they say he's like, I'm 10.
Yeah, they're supposed to be 10. Some of them are a little older.
I was in seventh grade when this came out. So.
Oh, okay. So not exactly.
Yeah, you're a little
I think I was newly in college when this came out.
I'm sure I was on my first marriage when this came out.
So you're
all bibbies.
We are crossing generations with this show. After this, we'll decay in what I think the opinions are going to be. We'll go to Robin next, and then Camila, and then end with me. But first, here's some information. School of Rock was released October 3rd, 2003. It was the 33rd number one movie of the year. Won the weekend with $19.6 million before making $79.8 million, the 34th best film of the year. Top grossing film of 2003 was Finding Nemo, $335 million, followed by the first Pirates of the Caribbean, $303 million. It only narrowly won the weekend. This is just barely a number one over a movie I definitely don't remember, Out of Time, which finished...
Denzel?
It's like the most generic Denzel movie.
I think there's another one. Deja Vu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was in second with $16.1 million. I'm taking... We never do this, but I want to list the top 10 movies from this weekend because it is a stunningly random collection of movies. Tell me how many of these you have any relationship with 16 years later. School of Rock's number one. Out of Time is number two. Followed by The Rundown.
Saw it.
Ooh, I like that. That was one of the... They used to do one-cent rentals on Wednesdays from Comcast, and that was a one-cent rental.
That's one where I'm convinced it was cast by pulling names out of a hat. This movie has Christopher Walken, The Rock, and Sean William Scott. All right, fine. Under the Tuscan Sun, Secondhand Lions...
That's a good movie.
I never saw it.
That's a good movie.
Underworld. Lost in Translation was expanding at the time. Then The Fighting Temptations, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, and Cold Creek Manor.
I enjoyed Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Wait, that's the Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a weird...
Not The Mexican with Brad Pitt and Julia Roberts.
No.
The Mexican with no Mexican.
Well, it was a weird... It was a weird era. Hollywood did not really have a direction in 2003. This was the height of the era where nothing repeated at number one. In the 52 weekends of that year, there were 42 number one movies.
Wow.
Only one of which won three weekends, and it was Bringing Down the House.
With Steve Martin and Queen Latifah. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
That was the only three-weekend winner that year. In comparison, 1990 had 26 number ones. Last year had 32 number ones. This had 42. School of Rock did not repeat a number one. It fell to second the following week behind the debuting Kill Bill Volume 1, but it did hold very well. $15.4 million its second weekend. It was in the top 10 for 6 weeks. Jack Black was nominated for the Golden Globe for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy.
Well deserved.
Because the Golden Globes are silly.
because he gave a great performance.
The ridiculous. Here are the nominees that year: Jack Black for School of Rock, Billy Murray for Lost in Translation.
Who won? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Johnny Depp for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Also great performance. Billy, yeah. Valid nomination.
Billy Bob Thornton for Bad Santa.
No.
Jack Nicholson for Something's Gotta Give.
Also a good performance. That's a great lineup.
It is.
But is
I,
it?
I hate that musicals and comedies are smashed together.
Yeah, that's so weird. The Golden Globes are total nonsense. Mm-hmm. But I... Bad Santa, I'm not sure I've ever seen it.
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
It's not good.
No. Like, I wouldn't imagine it is.
I don't know how it got a reputation.
Is it on our list for our Christmas
It's probably
draw?
The... I don't think so.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it was a number one.
It's the same people who saw Jackass and loved it. That's probably that's Bad Santa crowd.
I kind of love Jackass. Anyway.
Yeah, me too.
Bill Murray.
Billy Bob Thornton in the Bad News Bears.
Yes, it was.
Cool.
Bill Murray went on to an Oscar nomination. So did Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp was nominated for Best Actor for the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
An Oscar?
For
Pirates?
Yeah.
Well deserved.
No,
he was great.
He was great, like, but it's...
Just to be clear, Johnny Depp is a trash human being. But he beat Amber Heard.
Did he?
Yes.
I thought she came back and was like, hey, yo.
Because she got paid.
I'm leaving. there's nothing I could add that'll help.
I'm pretty much was done with both of them. You know what?
Yeah.
I don't
I'm probably
going
to cut this, by the way, just to be clear.
No, you can leave it in. They also, together, they smuggled an animal through customs.
They did do that.
That's not good for either of them.
They did do that.
What animal?
There was a dog.
They were like going to Australia.
They were shooting. I think one of the pirates in Australia. He brought his dog. He wasn't supposed to.
You know, we don't need rules. We don't abide by laws.
Mm-hmm. So they just brought their dog anyways, and then as punishment, he had to do a PSA for why you shouldn't do that in Australia.
This was punishment. Okay.
That I want to watch. No matter how you feel about Johnny Depp, I want to see that PSA. Of course, that award was won by Sean Penn for Mystic River.
My daughter!
Bill Murray, still salty about that.
Remember, as he should be.
No, yeah, he should have won. I think Sean Penn was great in Mystic River, but Bill Murray should have won. At the time, School of Rock was the top grossing musical comedy of all time. According to one of those weird box office mojo lists, it was eventually dethroned by Pitch Perfect 2.
Two
made more money. The first one was kind of a sleeper hit because everyone went. Yeah. Acapella, you know, then anyway. I think the second one is number one, but the first one isn't. And the musical was successful. The TV show was kind of successful. So. The School of Rock Empire.
Nice.
Robin, you're feeling positive today.
I love this movie.
Okay, go on.
Yeah. I think, first of all, I think Jack Black is at the height of his powers here.
Yeah. Yeah, this was Jack Black and his Jack Blackiness.
Yes.
The role was written for him, so
that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, okay. There it is.
I'm not 100% sure that I love Jack Black. But I am 100% sure that I love Jack Black in this movie.
I love Jack Black, but not all his movies, because there's
exhausting.
There's a middle point there where he's like, I'm just going to do shit.
He's so funny. The kids are all great. The music is great. The part where he, like, makes up the song, with, like, the I didn't get an allowance today.
I'm really pissed off.
I want to rewind that scene and watch it a second time. That's one of those scenes. Joan Cusack is great.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Nice. I love the heartwarming ending.
Mm-hmm.
I, like, literally was tearing up the other night when I was watching this, and it reminded me of, there was this one summer that Sister Act 2 was an HBO movie, and you know how they just, like, show the same movies over and over again? And my mom watched it every time it was on and cried at the end. Every time it was on. And my mom was not a crier.
Well, that is a beautiful, like, heartwarming tale.
But this reminds me of that ending with less good singing.
Right, yeah.
I absolutely agree that he was at the height of his powers. His superpower is doing shtick that should be annoying, and yet it is endearing. Anyone else in the world, if they kind of did the scat talking and the weird faces and the rock moves, and maybe my favorite moment in the movie is where he's just moving the phone around to act like he's handing it off for just 20 seconds too long. And that stuff is great. And it's really cool when that annoyingness is used in the service of yelling at children. That's always fun.
Yeah.
I'm with you on
that. Bad News Bears. Although, actually, I don't think I've ever seen the Richard Linklater Bad News Bears. But
I saw the original.
The original was in heavy rotation as a child.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember it exists. I think I saw it. That doesn't mean I remember it, but I think I saw it. Camila, I don't have a read on how you feel about School of Rock.
It is a sweet movie. That's a very sweet movie. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jack Black. I was a fan of his for a while, and it comes and goes. Like he's very exhausting.
Yes.
And I'm always like, is this man gonna have a stroke at any point in time? Because like he just turns really red. He's just all over the place, but you can tell like him and those kids had the best time making this film. And that like shows, and it's really sweet. And I love those kids. I love Leonard. I think it was the best. He barely had a part, but he was the one where he's like, I'm not in the band. And I almost cried, wept.
My God. He becomes a roadie, right?
Yes. Or security. I think he's
security.
He's the other half of security.
Yeah, security, yeah.
Yeah, so it is, I mean, it's a really fun movie. And, you know, Dan, this is his go-to tearjerker, and he's wept a little bit when we watched it the other night.
This is a go-to comfort movie. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's
yes.
definitely that.
Yes.
It is really easy to watch and put on and enjoy and feel nice about the world. And I love the ending credits
where they're just all jamming. Yes, that's my favorite part.
And
he did, like, I think he gave those nicknames when the kids are all lined up. He gave them all. So those were improvised. Like, that
Turkey
was,
stuff.
Yes. And it's just, I mean, it's just really fun. I think the most thing about that, the most that I enjoy about this movie is the fact that you can tell they had a great time filming it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, after I saw this movie, every time I hear Edge of 17, I think of that scene.
Same. But speaking of that scene, it always drives me nuts because she has, what, 3 sips of a light, what I think is a light beer,
right.
And she's shit-faced? What is up with that?
She probably hasn't had a drink in 5 years.
So, yeah, so my friend is pregnant right now, and she had a few sips of a beer recently, and she said...
You're allowed.
Just a little bit, right? And she said that she 100% was like, and I'm drunk.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the other thing about that scene that bugs me is that when she is sitting in there, he puts the song on, she's like, oh, I love this song, and you can tell she's feeling it. She's feeling the song. She's in it. And he is interrupting and talking to her. And he's like fucking with her groove. Mm-hmm. And that annoys the piss out of me when I'm in my moment.
Is that a good strategy, right?
I mean, I understand his strategy, but just like for like selfish reasons, and I was like, I can identify with that. And you're like, you're listening to your jam, and then somebody in the car with you just starts to talk, and it's like, not now. Mm-hmm. You've got 3.5 minutes to just be quiet. Let's just not now.
I do enjoy it more when I apply my personal headcanon, which has always been that this is a direct sequel to High Fidelity.
I kind of play with that too.
That's Jack Black's character from High Fidelity. Things aren't going well. This is next. It's the same character, and he's also like an over-the-top guy in a band. And
Is Joan Cusack the same character?
Who is she in High Fidelity?
She's the best friend of the ex-girlfriend.
Right. Oh, yeah. She comes in and yells at him.
Yes.
Yeah. That's true.
And she says, that is shocking. Yes. I
fold in my own personal cinematic universe because the other one I do this with is that, in my mind, Zombieland is definitely a sequel to Adventureland.
Oh, I like it.
That like and at the end of Zombieland, they're going to an amusement park, and I kept waiting for him to say, I used to work at one, just like as a throwaway. But that is part of this cinematic universe because there's a throwaway at the beginning of Zombieland where Mike White gets eaten in a bathroom. And so in my mind, all 4 of those movies
are
connected.
The real Ned Schneebly dies in the Zombieland apocalypse. The
real Ned Schneebly dies in a bathroom in the first Zombieland.
Shame.
That's shocking.
The sequel is a lot of fun. Anybody else see Zombieland 2?
Not yet.
That came out?
Yeah. I know.
It did okay.
I saw the trailer where they make a big deal about how everyone in the cast is Oscar nominated, which I found very amusing.
Yeah. I mean, that's amusing. And it's also remarable that they got all 4 of them.
To get back?
I think
that's a We Have Good Times Making This Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just... Jesse Eisenberg, man. He just really blows. I'll watch it, like, when it comes out, when it's rentable, but...
The wrong sibling is famous.
Oh, yeah.
Who's his sibling?
It's the Pepsi girl.
What Pepsi
girl? Oh! The 1990s. Haley Eisenberg.
That little girl. Matt Curly Sue?
Is
Are you serious?
That's his sister?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
The things you know.
I love the Joan Cusack.
Faxy strikes again.
Woo!
I love the Joan Cusack character. I like the Mike White character. I'm just going to be a grouch for a minute because I feel bad about it now. It's fine. I don't think it's that funny, and the middle act bores me. Like, that whole middle chunk, all of those...
Where they're learning how to be in a rock band?
Yeah, there's no obstacles or impediments. Like, they throw, like, little tiny, like, are they not going to be allowed because they were late to the, and all of that. I'm like, yep, just get to it, get to it. I don't particularly like one person has a wacky scheme and let's wait around for it to be revealed plots in comedies. Mm-hmm. Like, I've brought that up before. It's worse when it's the Three's Company plot, the, like, if one person would tell the truth, this whole situation would be resolved. This isn't as bad as that. But when it's, like, one secret that is clearly going to be unveiled 80% of the way through the movie and we're just waiting for it, that doesn't work for me as well. And I don't know why it bothers me that Jack Black's tastes are so mainstream.
Yeah, you would think there'd be a lot more deeper cuts.
The background music in the movie is better than the music that he likes.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be like The Clash and The Ramones and T-Rex and Modern Lovers and really cool stuff. And then he's like, hey, let's get into Russian Yes.
Like, At least he picked the one good Yes song, so.
I was just going to say, there are a couple
Yes songs.
That is my jam. That is one that I would be quiet
to that on the way to work today. Nice. Yeah.
And then his van is covered in, like, early aughts bro rock stickers. Like, he's rolling around with a Godsmack bumper sticker.
Did not notice that. Nor do I know who Godsmack is.
I'm not the one
who's so
is that right?
Away.
Yeah. And I feel the snake bite enter my veins. Never did I want to feel this again. And I don't remember why I came.
Cheers.
Yeah. That was beautiful, guys.
You know more Godsmack songs than you think. Okay. I
don't know that song that they just sang.
I walked out of a Godsmack concert. I walked out. Well, no, it was an X Fest, so it's all day. There were many bands. They were going on last, and at the time, they had the exclusive contract for providing songs to the Army for Army recruitment commercials.
I remember that. Yes.
Their concert began with like a really like intense, angry, jingoistic, you know, we're the U.S. and we're stronger than everyone video.
Oh my God.
That with like, you know, that
was
that,
this during the Iraq war?
Yeah, it was. Ooh. And it was like, you know, that night vision green that like ended with like, you know, footage of like bombs dropping. And
ooh,
then
that's
on,
a real collar yank.
On the stage, there's like little mushroom cloud shaped pyro that goes.
Oh my
and I'm
God.
Like, and I'm out going to the bar. That was it.
And eagles painted in red, white and blue were dropped from the sky.
It was alarming. Wow. And that's on this man's awesome rock van. I was impressed that he had an entire band's worth of equipment in his van at all times.
I was like, seriously, he pulls it out and he's got the whole, I was like, wow.
Not just the guitars, he's got a keyboard, he's got a full drum set ready to go that he got set up in the space of a 30-minute music lesson. It was amazing.
I do want to say that one of my favorite scenes is on the way back from, oh no, are we going to be able to be on the bill at the Battle of the Bands, when they're listening to Immigrant Song.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I love that scene anyway. But part of the reason that I love it so much is that if you have the DVD and you watch the special features, one of the special features is that when they filmed the end concert, Jack Black filmed a video begging Led Zeppelin to let them use the song because they used to not let movies use their songs.
Mm-hmm.
This was 2 years after the first movie that used a Led Zeppelin song, which was Almost Famous, Faxy.
And
he has like the 10,000 extras like sing Immigrant Song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's so awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I did read that little trivia that, you know, they were like, they used to be like that. But I was like, well, I guess it's past now because now it's all over Marvel.
100% gave up on that. The first time I was like, oh, they just stopped doing this was, what is that horrible Zack Snyder movie where it's like Sucker Punch?
Ugh.
When Sucker Punch.
It's kind of entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, I hated it.
Oh, God.
I hated it.
I watched most of it fast forward and then I just gave up.
As soon as I heard Led Zeppelin, and I think even the trailer for that, I was like, they gave up.
Mm-hmm. No, that's like, certainly true.
We like the monies.
I think when their music was in the Cadillac commercial, it was like, we're done.
So that was before.
Yeah.
That was like the first time they licensed it at all. was in a Cadillac?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was rock and roll. But
I do like the preceding scene because kids pretending to be melodramatically sick
is
real funny. So
funny. The kid just laying in the street.
That's the best one. Where he's like, oh, we lost one. That's so good.
And then he gets up like, quit it, you're dying, you're supposed to be dying. And he falls over again.
Yeah.
It's like, that's
he
so
does.
Funny.
He
yeah.
falls back over again. I don't know why I'm grouchy about this. Maybe I saw it too much. I don't know.
Is that a thing? Like, is it just something that was just like, was it playing and you would just watch it?
It was on TV a lot forever and you'd leave it on for a while and I think I might have got sick of it then.
Or maybe you're just sick of Jack Black.
I could be sick of Jack Black. I generally like him. I'm trying to figure out when I think he's the best. Obviously, he was really great in
Tropic Thunder.
Everybody's problematic fave, Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Everybody's problematic fave?
People still haven't really figured out whether or not the blackface stuff was okay.
I'm, as a black woman.
Please. I'm not going to take a take with you in the room.
Please.
You're here to do
all
that.
All black people right,
right
now.
Exactly. I love Robert Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so when I heard about this, I was very on the fence about even going to see it. I was
Your eyebrow went right up.
Right. I was like, I don't know. This could go really narrow. And then I have to break up with our DJ and I don't want to, don't know if I'm ready for that. So I saw it and I loved it. I think he did a great job.
I agree.
Think he approached it with respect. It wasn't any mockery, and it was just, I just think he did a beautiful job in it, and it wasn't like an imitate. It was almost like he spent time with this man,
yeah.
with whoever mm-hmm. this man is, from some dude from probably Louisiana or something, supposed to be like, he was doing a great job, and it was just the fact that he approached it with such respect. And there was no mockery about it. And
also, Oscar nominated performance.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah. So I have no problems with that. I find
okay, great.
It hilarious.
It is a really funny movie.
Whole entire movie.
Tom Cruise in that movie.
That's the best Tom
really
Cruise
good.
Ever.
Yeah, he should have been Oscar nominated as well.
That's his best. He's his most. Speaking of, this is School of Rock is Jack Black at his most pure self. I believe Tropic Thunder is Tom Cruise at his most
That's who
pure
he really
self.
Is.
That
Agreed.
Seems right.
Agreed.
I am. I don't
what
know.
What about when he's like riding a motorcycle onto a helicopter? I don't know if he's ever actually done that, but he probably will at some point.
He'll get around to it. Now that I'm looking, I don't know. Like, the Goosebumps movie was bad, and I don't really like Jack Black in the Jumanji.
Really?
Oh,
love him in that.
I love that movie. Everything in that movie that probably shouldn't work, works.
I was shocked at how much I loved that movie.
And Jack Black is the perfect example of that. That absolutely. Should be terrible.
Right.
And it's great.
But his thing like Goosebumps that wasn't, The House with a Clock in Its Walls, was way better than it had any right to be.
Yeah.
Really?
I never saw it.
And there's a Netflix original before Netflix originals got a lot of attention called The Polka King, where he is great, and it is as perfect a role for him as Kung Fu Panda. Which, by the way, the first time I saw a poster that said Jack Black is Kung Fu Panda, I was like, yes, yes, he is. That is entirely correct. The Polka King is about like a 60s, 70s era polka performer in Eastern Pennsylvania who simultaneously like was Grammy nominated and successful by polka standards and was using his polka success to like run a Ponzi scheme on old people supporting his.
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's him and Jenny Slate is his like, you know, high aspiring small town wife. It's not really funny, but it's really good.
I'm not thinking of any, but has he had any dramatic roles?
I think Bernie counts.
Really?
King Kong?
Oh, yeah.
King Kong.
Which is awful.
I've never actually seen that movie all the way through.
I liked it. It's not as good as Kong Skull Island, but...
What is?
Kong Skull Island is so good.
Shout out to my friend Derek, who one day said, the only times I've ever bought CGI in a movie was Forrest Gump and Kong Skull Island.
That's a perfect transition point. Let's rate School of Rock. Guests first. So, Dan, it's your favorite movie on a scale of 1 to 100.
89.
So you've never seen a movie that was higher than 89?
I mean... This is my favorite. No,
right.
Movie.
No, we talked about it. Favorite and best are two different things.
But no movie's perfect, so.
Right. Robin?
93.
Oh, wow.
I love this movie.
You can't have rated it higher than me. That's not right.
Yeah,
I love this movie. I went and looked at my previous highest rating, 92 for Ocean's 11, and this movie is better than that.
This movie, okay. Well.
She has the look of fight me behind her eyes.
I do.
I feel bad about bringing it down as far as I'm going to. Camila?
You're entitled to your opinions.
Right. 74.
74.
Okay.
I've got a 56.
Ooh.
Woof.
Whoa.
That is.
I would have given.
I mean, even if you just liked every last one of those kids.
Someone just said you're entitled to your opinion.
It was me.
It was Robin, not me.
Could you give us another movie that you rated in the 50s?
I gave Sharky's Machine a 54. This is
you like 2%. Sharky's Machine?
No, this is 2% better than Sharky's Machine. And. What else? 4% worse than Jagged Edge. Gave Jagged Edge a 60.
Jagged Edge was awful.
Please weigh in while I'm tallying, because now you're the third person I know besides me and Robin who saw Jagged Edge.
Yeah, I gave that a 58.
Oh, wow. So you've been playing along as well?
Oh, you've been reading along.
I love it. What's your highest?
Skull Rock.
Jinx. Skull Rock.
Oh, okay.
What's your lowest?
My lowest was Divergent, obviously.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So what was my next? Probably Talladega Nights at 76.
Okay.
I love Talladega Nights.
And Incredibles, too. I gave it an 80.
Oh. Okay.
If I hadn't been such a grouch yesterday morning while watching this movie, it would have had a really good chance of flirting with our best ever. As such, it is third on our list at 78.
That's good.
Behind only Ocean's 11 at 87 and What About Bob at 78.5.
I can accept that.
Yeah. I was wavering against, like, do I like this more or less than What About Bob? And I'm still not sure.
Give that a 75.
I feel like I should have given What About Bob in the 90s.
Mm.
But can't change it now.
No. Can't go back. It is in an Excel spreadsheet.
I guess I had objections in the moment.
Yeah. All right. No. Don't second guess it.
Don't second guess. Great.
I liked Jagged Edge. Anyway, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth.
And so much
there's
to say.
So much. I don't know where to begin. Let's get to Martin Scorsese. As we're recording this, I'm in an argument with a fan of the show and friend of the show and all-around film expert, Lauren Kozlowski. You know, Scorsese tried to clarify his take on why he doesn't think Marvel movies are cinema and made some
in a New York Times op-ed that was released the morning that we are recording
and made some points that a lot of people are agreeing with, and I'm kind of okay boomer, like I don't he hasn't seen any of the movies.
That's unclear.
He either hasn't seen any of them or maybe has seen a couple. Those it's somewhere in that range. He's doing this thing where he's saying, like, by this definition of cinema, which I am making up and is only for me, I don't think these things count. And, like, I don't know how the reaction to that is anything, but okay, good for you.
Yeah, but no, everybody's just been, like, up in arms about the whole entire thing.
A lot of people are angry about him, and a lot of other old guy white directors are jumping in to be like, no, he's right. They're not.
That's my main issue with this, is everybody who talks about the good old days is talking about a time then pretty much only white men made movies.
Right.
And it... So gross.
I mean,
that's how
the whole
I feel.
Point, right. Well, the whole point of, well, not the whole point, but like movies, there is a beauty in the fact that it is evolving. Like, it's not going to be, everything's not going to be a Taxi Driver, which, thank God, you know, we have changed that.
Joker wants to be a taxi driver. Did you get to see that yet?
I still haven't seen it. But yeah, like, I mean, it's just like there's an evolution of everything and all of our pop culture and all of our media that we consume. It needs to grow. Otherwise, it's just going to be stagnant. It needs to be different. So, like, his definition of cinema is somebody else's definition of cinema. Why did he even... Was it just, like, out of nowhere? It's like, nobody. And Martin Scorsese, hey, superhero movies aren't cinema.
Somebody asked, you know, someone in some Irishman press junket in Italy asked him what he thinks of Marvel movies. And he gave an answer. And it was starting to fade. And he could have just let it go away, still with several weeks between now and his movie actually coming out. And then he wrote an op-ed about it. The problem I have is he doesn't just go, hey, these aren't for me, and by my definition, they're not.
Right.
Then he ties it into this whole, like, the industry is dying. It's terrible that all you can go to the theater and see is features, and this is the death of the auteur, and these great movies. And these movies are still getting made. The fact that people don't see them as much does not mean they're not getting made. Lauren's point, which I can't argue with, is where he lives... a lot of the more interesting movies don't play all the time. All and right. I realize for a lot of people in flyover country, you know, you can't go, we're in flyover country. I'm allowed to say it. you can't go to the theater and see Parasite. You can't go to the theater and see The Last Black Man in San Francisco. That's not my experience. I guess here in Pittsburgh, we're lucky enough where while those aren't at every single Cinemark, you usually can find those within a 20-minute drive.
Right.
But the cinema is dying because people don't get to make their own movies anymore. That's just not true.
No.
It's not true.
And there's like 50 different ways to watch and release films now. So it doesn't, they don't always have to be in the theater. And it's like, it's getting harder to get people to leave their houses to go to the actual theater.
And is this guy who made a 3.5-hour movie and is releasing it on Netflix roughly the same time he's putting it in theaters for its qualifying run,
mm-hmm.
is he saying that he, like, you drove me to this?
Is he blaming us?
That's in the op-ed a little bit. Okay. It's like, it's a shame that the only place I can go to get the money to, it's like, you requested $160 million budget and a 4-hour running time. The fact that Netflix is too new to like be like, no, does not mean that the rest, that just means that the studios still actually try to control things. Producers are important.
Exactly. They're not just going to let any and everybody just come on through. It's like, yes, 4 hours, sure, that seems about right.
Everything is too long.
It's so long.
I've got 4 movies this week. They're all more than 2 hours.
It's not okay. I am so upset by it. Like, I feel like movies, just get to the point, tell it, 90 minutes to 2 hours, that's all you get. That's it right there. And the same goes for songs longer than 4 minutes. Like, I just can't.
Have we covered it?
I think so.
Sorry, Lauren. movies that we saw and like.
Parasite. Oh my gosh, go see it. Don't know anything about it. Just go see it.
It's pretty good, right?
It's amazing.
It's real.
It could be a little shorter.
Yeah.
The 2 hours and 19 minutes.
2 hours and 12 minutes. But man, does that work.
It's so good. Go see it.
It's another one that's like, this is no particular genre. Like,
yeah, I was just going to say, give me a genre. Give me something.
It's a horror comedy.
Okay.
I don't know if it's horror.
I think it is.
Jojo Rabbit is the other one this week where I was like, I don't think this is any genre, and it's really good. Jojo Rabbit's really good, too.
I might go see it tonight.
You were saving Terminator Dark Fate for the podcast when I asked you the other day how that was.
So, talking about, you know, CGI in people's faces.
Yeah.
The beginning of Terminator Dark Fate, so it's like an alternate timeline. It's kind of like the Halloween sequel, right? And they're sort of like, ignore the other ones, okay?
Seriously?
Yep. And which is fair in a time travel franchise, that's way easier to accept.
Yeah, don't get me started on time travel.
So it's like a somewhat direct delayed sequel to T2, okay? But the very beginning, so I hope this is not considered a spoiler.
Yeah.
They show...
It's already bombed, so you're fine.
Yeah, they show CGI Edward Furlong. As a child, get murdered and by a Terminator. And so we've got young Arnold Schwarzenegger, young Linda Hamilton, and child Edward Furlong.
Mm-hmm.
And they all look terrible.
Oh, no.
And
cardboard cutouts.
It's like Rogue One level.
Yeah, Rogue One was really bad. Yeah. Now, Captain Marvel was really good.
Yeah.
Well, the word is Irishman looks really good.
And Gemini Man was really good. And that isn't even, they put dots on Will Smith's face and fixed it. They just drew a Will Smith.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yes. So I saw Gemini Man. I can't remember if I talked about this in the podcast in the last episode. But I was curious. I'm like, does it look better than this looked because of the high frame rate? Or did they just do a much better job? Or both? But what I was going to say specifically about this scene at the beginning of Dark Fate is that made me, it destroyed my suspension of disbelief.
Mm.
And then they have a big highway chase, which makes me think about the big LA River part of T2, and which was, they blew up trucks.
Right.
Right? They got actual trucks and blew them up. And so watching all these CGI trucks get blown up, it just didn't hit right.
Mm-hmm.
And it took well into the movie before I started getting back in the right mindset.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Dark Fate is on our list because it didn't have any strong competition, so it did win this weekend, but it did so with so little money that this arc of them is not going to continue. So with that in mind, I missed it. Do I need to go catch up on it? No.
I mean, it's a watch on video kind of like watch it at some point in your life, maybe.
Is Linda Hamilton good?
Oh, she's great. She's so badass and she's awesome. And like, there's a couple good jokes in there. Mackenzie Davis is pretty hot, but like, it's nothing to write home about. Colin loved it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Camila, seen anything?
I finally watched Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I kept, like, there are 10 different days where I was about to go see that and I never did.
I keep forgetting that exists.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't bother with it. Like, let me rephrase that. It's not what I was anticipating. Mm-hmm. I was anticipating, like, some real dark horror.
Yeah, those are traumatizing for children.
Right.
Yeah.
So those mess me up.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is, like, I feel like this is targeted towards, like, junior high, like, tween those kids. Like, the monsters, yes, like they completely, yes, well done. Looks just like the illustrations in the books. So very well done. But the storyline, I'm just like, meh. So I was kind of disappointed.
This is where my list evolves pretty rapidly. But today, as of today, I have a new number one of the year.
Ooh.
Marriage Story. No?
I'm going to see it.
Then justify your skepticism, please.
Oh, what was this?
This is Noah Baumbach's thing about Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver getting divorced.
I want to see this.
I'm going to see it.
I'm hot and cold on him. He has some movies that I'm like, this was pretty good. And he has some movies that I'm like, this was a pretentious waste of everyone's time.
That's my concern.
This is the one where everything works and had me reacting emotionally more than anything I can remember in years. Like, there are moments watching this where I like buried my face in my hands because I was devastated by what was happening to these characters. And I'm swinging back and forth from scene to scene with which one of them I'm identifying with. Both performances are excellent.
Is this in theaters or on Netflix?
It might be in one stray theater, but basically it's on Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed it.
Mm-hmm.
When does it come out for real people?
On Netflix? Not until, I think, the first week of December.
Okay.
But it,
sorry
it,
to just say you're not a real person.
Right. I know. It might have a short theatrical window, like The Irishman before that.
Is it 3.5 hours long?
It's 2:20 or something. Everything is too long. and this is one where it will be better in the theater because it's kind of, it's you know, A domestic drama is easier to turn your head away from in your living room than it is in the theater. So that's a shame. But that's only my fourth 10 out of 10 this year, but it's the best of them. Again, if you look at the movies I usually put at the top of my list, it's usually not a long divorce drama. This one just happens to be perfect.
Right.
I loved it.
I do enjoy those movies that like really dissect people's relationships like that, and I guess particularly like the romantic ones.
Have you seen Blue Valentine?
Yes,
I recently watched that in my quest to see all Oscar nominated performances, and
it hurts, but it's worth it. Like, I
don't know if
I
thought it was worth it.
I thought, yeah, I mean, I don't understand. I've talked to a lot of people that are just like, I can't. So I'm like, I think it was worth the trip, worth the ride. Like,
I haven't seen it.
Colin came downstairs and he's like, what are you watching? And I'm like, I absolutely will not watch this with you.
I need you to leave the premises, sir.
That's a nice thing about Marriage Story. In the middle of it, I was like, I'm losing faith in not just marriage, but relationships. And by the end, it was affirming. By the end, I loved the world more.
Like, okay. Closer is kind of like that. Is it Closer with like Clive
That's
Davis?
That's good. Yeah. Clive Owen. Much different
That's
person.
That's right. Clive Owen and them.
Dan, seen anything?
I saw the Downton Abbey movie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It was pleasant.
Yeah, it was.
was this something that you wanted to see, or?
Did you watch the show?
Because, I mean, your body language tells me that it's just kind
of
like...
Oh, I've seen some of the episodes, but my mom really wanted to go see it, so I went with her, and I thought she was really going to love this movie, and as we were leaving the theater, I said, so, yeah, that was good, and she's like, that was the most boring, predictable movie I've ever seen.
Thanks,
and
Mom.
She watched every episode, so...
Wow, okay.
Interesting.
Well, my parents liked it. I thought you're there...
I'm sorry.
What?
I was going to make a dead parents joke about my parents. I was like, my parents have no opinion.
Which is only funny if you know your parents are dead, and then it goes back to not funny because your parents are dead.
It's a home.
I think it's funny.
Thank you.
That's why we have that.
Thank you.
Dan, anything else you want to add about School of Rock, this podcast, the current state of the cinema, anything else before we move on?
Robin's parents.
No, cinema, whatever. I mean, that's literally the definition. Anything on a screen is cinema.
Sure.
So any definition that anyone has is kind of bullshit, in my opinion. Because, you know, a movie's, I mean, yeah, some are more artsy and some are more mainstream, but they're still cinema. They're both the same thing. It's like trying to say a podcast is not radio and radio is not a podcast. Yeah. They're pretty similar. Yeah. And School of Rock's just, you know, good movie. It's a movie I've seen, I know, way too many times, because when I rewatched it this morning for the show, I was saying every line with the characters. And I didn't miss a beat, and I was like, I'm annoying myself, so I'm gonna stop. But I know every word of that movie, which is just bad. And yeah,
I think it's great.
Could you help me out real quick? Because I can't remember. It's been bugging me all day. I can't remember the song at the end that they all sing.
Long Way to the Top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want me to say? Yeah. Cause
it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
There
if
it
you
is.
Think it's easy and one night stands, try playing in a rock roll band.
There is
a video on YouTube of they did a 10-year reunion.
I saw that.
Where they got the everyone back together and they sang that song. And then they kept asking Jack Black about the sequel because it never happened.
Oh, there was supposed to be a sequel?
There was a sequel. I think they tangentially wrote the script. It was supposed to be about he continues on with the school being the after school person. And he was going to take the new group of kids on a rock and roll adventure across America.
Mm. Oh, I would have loved that.
That sounds dangerous.
It's not going to. I mean, Richard Linklater is doing one project for the next 20 years, yeah. So he can't do it now.
Quick
There's
question.
One of those kids. I'm trying to pull it up now. I mean, it doesn't matter. Okay. Look it up. There's one of those kids, the little blonde one who's a backup singer.
Mm-hmm. Like, Blondie?
Yeah, Blondie. She looks. Her adult self looks more like her child self than any person I've ever seen. Like, you know, like you pull up these, here's what they look like now. And right. You're all like, oh, I can see how that's the same person. And that's the end of it.
Because like, Miranda her Cosgrove face, is like completely unrecognizable.
Her face never changed.
By the way, I love the fact she's the one that doesn't get picked to sing. And yet she's the one with the record.
That's Summer?
The record deal.
She has a record?
She put out two records, yeah.
Is that Summer?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, she has two records, yeah.
I think the thing was, like, she's the only one that could actually sing, and she had to take lessons to sing badly.
I loved her bad singing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
But yeah, yeah.
Spazzy McGee. Now that's a nickname.
Yeah.
Is that insensitive? I don't
it
care.
It is.
Yeah.
So we got to draw a movie. Camila, I told Robin a little bit about this. Here's the thing. Box Office Mojo, everyone in Hollywood is mad because Box Office Mojo like did a sudden unannounced dramatic redesign, and a lot of the information that used to be public disappeared behind the IMDb Pro paywall.
Gross.
Yeah, it's really annoying. It's going to have an effect like I can no longer for free tell you like here's what Jack Black's top grossing movies are. Like a lot of that detailed information that I used to be doing in the Factsy segment is unavailable. Very frustrating. However, they added some select results for weekends between 1978 and 1981. And I got excited and added all of those to the list.
And then I was like, slow your roll.
Now, here's the thing. This is, and again, we're having this conversation. It may never come up. Uh-huh. And we may never land on one of these.
Yeah.
60 to 70% of these are either obviously number ones, mm-hmm. like Superman, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Things I would want to talk about on this podcast.
Uh-huh. Or they're a little below that, but they still made $6 million that weekend. And you know, we probably can't scientifically confirm that they were the number one movie in America, but they were very close. There's a few things on this list that were not the number one movie in America. They're just the only thing that there's any data for that weekend. Mm. And so Box Office Mojo has this list that lists one movie, and so it's number one.
Uh-huh.
What I'm going to do, unless we draw one right now, in which we'll have a longer conversation, I'm going to put those on with an asterisk.
Okay.
If they come up, we decide, do we actually want to watch this obscure thing,
mm-hmm.
or free reroll?
Okay, because it also might be that we like some of those we can't even find them anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. Watch them.
A lot of, like I said, a lot of these, and there were a ton of good stuff, like Raging Bull was in there, Friday the 13th, a number of things that I'm very happy to have on the
Maybe
list.
Maybe Karate now. Kid.
Karate Kid's 1984 could be on a regular list.
I think Karate Kid. It's not.
No.
Oh, shame.
That's so weird. Anyway, if one of those comes up, we'll take it case by case.
Okay.
It might never happen. But now,
all right.
We're going to draw a movie. The next time you hear from us, we'll be drawing for our one Christmas episode. We have a question for the listeners.
Oh, yes.
Camila Adams.
And we'll put this on Twitter, too.
Yeah, we'll put it on Twitter also. But we would like to know, do you consider Frozen a Christmas movie? Let us know. Tweet at us at number one
movie pod.
The number one, correct?
Number. The word number. Then the number one. Just find one of our individual Twitters.
Just Google it or whatever podcast. Yeah. But to find us and let us know, like, please, we want to know, is Frozen an actual Christmas movie? Because if you guys consider it a Christmas movie, it goes on the list. And it also opens up some other possible movies to
other
add to the list.
Wintry movies.
Wintry, right. It adds a wintry mix to the list. The one thing
I've always wanted to say that.
The one thing I would point out is the list's very short.
Right.
Yes. Like our Halloween had more than 100 movies. Yeah. This was like
15
and down to 13 without the Frozen movies.
Right.
We are assuming Frozen 2 will be on
I think it's a safe assumption.
Yeah. It's apocalypse if it doesn't. Right. It
only if society breaks down between now and then.
If the Hunger Games happen, that's
could happen. But let us know what you think. There's a lot of things. The nice thing is, while it's only 13 movies, there were only like two that I didn't want. Like the only things I was like, no, please no, were like Four Christmases and Santa Claus 2. Anything else on the list, I would have been happy to talk about. So that's next time. This is our final totally random selection of the year, and thus the last time that we are proceeding with no vetoes. No vetoes. Whatever this is,
a clear slate.
Is the choice, and it is Finding Dory.
Son of a...
I mean, there's nothing wrong with Finding Dory. I enjoyed it.
As a guest, does he have a veto? Does Dan have a veto?
One good thing is that Disney Plus will arrive before our next recording.
That's right.
Date,
it's the Disney Plus episode.
So we'll be able
episode.
To watch this for free. And assuming y'all got Disney Plus.
I mean,
I'm going to because Jeff Goldblum has it.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. It's an excuse to do the Disney Plus episode. Yay. That's the positive spin I'm putting on this. I would give you veto power, but I don't want to. Again, we have a history of messing with the rules every time something we
bad
don't like
things
happens.
I know.
That
he knows, he listens.
Finding Dory.
I watched that on an airplane.
It can't be that bad.
It's bad.
I didn't see it, but
it's bad. I wish it was at least Finding Nemo.
It's Pixar. I could watch anything they do.
School of Rock came out October 3rd, 2003. What was the number one song in America in the fall?
Hey Ya.
That's got to be about the right time.
That's
literally
the only song I know from that.
Crazy in Love?
Right singer, wrong song.
Godsmack?
Right singer, wrong song. Okay, crazy.
Heya took over about 2 months after.
I Like the Way You Move.
No.
Deja Vu?
No.
Wait, so it's a Beyonce song?
It
is
that
Beyonce?
Beyonce? And it was number one for more than 2 months.
Irreplaceable?
No.
If I Were a Boy?
No. Beyonce featuring...
Jay-Z?
No.
Oh.
Shakira?
No. Nope.
Damn. No. It's too late.
Featuring whom?
Beyonce featuring Sean Paul. Baby Dirty Boy.
Oh, Baby Boy.
Oh, that's the number one song in America. From October 4th to November 29th. And it's so forgettable.
When it was in the clubs a lot, I recall that. Yeah. That was one of them grinding songs.
Not in the clubs at the time.
he was possibly in an after school club.
I was in the clubs at the time. I mean, I was literally never in the clubs.
I was only ever in the clubs when I was in Ireland, because in Ireland, surprisingly, bars close early. Bars close at like 11.
Really?
Because everyone's been drinking since 5. It doesn't matter. But bars close at 11, and at a certain point, the only thing that's still open is clubs, and I was over there for a semester in college. We weren't going to stop drinking at 11, so we would go to the club. So like, the only songs I think are club songs are like Promiscuous Girl and Sexy Back and the particular club jams that we're playing during the fall of 2006.
That is correct, though. Yeah. I mean, Promiscuous Girl was it? Sexy Back was definitely a club song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What does this have to do with Finding Dory? Very little. It's our Disney Plus special episode. It's a positive thing. It all worked out like it should. We'll be back.
Number one.